Right, let's get started today. Good morning and welcome to our latest Employment 101 webinar. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Peter. I'm a partner with MPM Legal. We're a specialist employment law and business immigration practice based in the south of England, but we work with clients that are all over the world. They have a common interest, which is employing people here in the UK. As always, I'm delighted to be joined today by my colleague, Adrienne. Morning, Adrienne.
Morning.
And I hadn't noticed, actually, you're in the office today. I'm so used to seeing your other background for webinars, but you've got the fancy artwork behind you.
I know. There we go.
There we go.
Rise and roar, it says, which is inspirational when I come in on a Monday morning, not feeling like rising or roaring, but there we are.
So those of you that have joined us before will know that we record these webinars. We host them on our website later. So you can share the content and revisit anything that you want to revisit in terms of these sessions. Please do ask questions. We absolutely love it when you ask us questions. If you're wanting to ask a question, please just use the Q&A function down at the bottom, because that just helps us keep track of the questions that have been asked. We can manage them. If you want to chat to any of the other participants today, there is a separate chat function as well. So just say hello, maybe put in where you're dialing in from today. Let us know where you are and whether the weather is a bit warmer than it has been where you are the last few days. I'll also mention that our sessions are on Spotify now as well. So you can listen to them at your leisure. We've got a whole bunch of different sessions going back to September when we started this series of Employment Law 101. And in fact, we've got our seasons on there before 2021 as well. 2021 into 2022, we had a whole series of episodes as well. A real diverse set of subjects for you to delve into. So please do check us out on Spotify. Right, without further ado, let's talk about our topic for today, which is one that's really been thrust into prominence since ChatGPT graced our computer displays and mobile telephones. Now, for those of you that don't know, ChatGPT is a chatbot, which is basically a machine that's been trained by human trainers to use artificial intelligence to be able to answer questions. Now, according to Wikipedia, although the core function of a chatbot is to mimic a human conversationalist, ChatGPT is a lot more versatile than that. So, for example, it's got the ability to write computer code, debug computer systems, it can compose music, it can write teleplays and scripts, it can write fairy tales, it can complete student essays, which is where it's popped up in the media. So there's a big concern in university establishments at the moment about what this means. It can also answer test questions as well. So somebody trained it to answer test questions for the accountancy examinations. I think it scored 43%, which sounded a little bit low to me. But then I read that the pass mark is only 55%. So against that, it's a pretty good performance. The questions that it can answer can be quite complex. And Elon Musk's take on it is that ChatGPT is scary good. He says we're not far from dangerously strong artificial intelligence, AI. It just kind of feels, with all the discussions prompted by ChatGPT in particular, that AI is on the cusp of a more mainstream breakthrough. And I think, I mean, I get that sense from just looking at LinkedIn, the sort of people that have been interested in it, myself included, and not the sort of people that perhaps historically have been interested in AI to any real degree, but all of a sudden everyone's got quite excited about it. It's got us thinking in the office about really what the impact is going to be in the workplace and some things that we can think about just to get ahead of the curve with all of this. So the first area that we want to have a look at is an area where HR and AI have already intersected, and that's in recruitment. So let's have a look at how AI is being used in recruitment. So at the moment, it's increasingly being used by employers, not only during the employment relationship, but pre-employment as well. So during the recruitment processes, and tools that AI can perform are sifts of CVs and application forms. It can be used to search prospective employees' social media for key phrases or terms. It can be trained to analyze the tone of voice or facial movements during interviews. And it can also perform automatic filtering of candidates through online assessments and tests. Now, when we're talking about AI, there isn't a single definition of it, but it often involves the replacement of human beings as the primary decision makers. And as part of the process of machine learning, AI systems are given tasks that enable them to write their own algorithms. Now, if we're talking about automated decision making, they are decisions that are being made without any direct human involvement. So that can happen when an AI tool is being used and a human's not actually interrogating or questioning the output, but instead just accepts it as being right. And I think question mark, is that a good thing or not? CIPD, the organization we're all familiar with, of course, they did a talent planning report in September 2022, and they found that 8% of employers are using AI to interpret job requirements and scan databases or the open web for relevant candidates. And 5% of employers are using AI to either screen candidates, so that could be shortlisting them on the basis of a job description, or to select those candidates as well. And typically that's through analysis of interview responses, which match up with hiring criteria, or in fact, using chatbots for first stage interviews as well, which I just find that as quite an unusual concept, but it is a thing. I'd actually be interested to know whether anybody on the call today is using any of this technology with any of the businesses that you're representing. So, you know, feel free to put in the chat if you are knowingly using AI in terms of your own processes. But our sense is that we can only expect these numbers to rise. So, you know, this technology is out there, it's increasingly been adopted. And if you're not an organization that's using it already, then it's probably something that is being considered, or elements of it are going to be utilized in the not too distant future. Now, what I was really interested in was a recent Cambridge University study, which suggested that using AI to reduce bias in recruitment is counterproductive. And there's a report called "Does AI Debias Recruitment? Race, Gender, and AI's Eradication of Difference." So this idea of just completely leveling the playing field. What I'll do is I'll probably put a post on LinkedIn after this webinar, actually. And I know quite a lot of you follow me on LinkedIn that are on the call today. So look out for that update, because I'll put a link to the report in there. But if you want to see the link, obviously, just find me on LinkedIn and I can share that information. The finding of the report, according to this research, is that artificially intelligent hiring tools do not reduce bias or improve diversity. And what the research was looking at was the suggestion that using AI in recruitment can really be super, super objective. So it will objectively assess candidates, it will remove gender and race from the systems, and in doing so, make the recruitment process fairer and help organizations with their DEI agenda, with their DEI goals, and basically establish meritocratic cultures as well. And, you know, I'm sure we're all aligned in how fantastic that is as a concept. Now, what their researchers did is they built their own simplified AI recruitment tool, and they rated candidate photographs for the big five personality traits. So those big five traits are agreeableness, extroversion, openness, conscientiousness, and neuroticism.
Where does that come from? Sorry, I was just totally fascinated by the big five personality traits in itself. I think that in itself is quite fascinating.
Yeah, I think they're long established, used in the field of psychology.
Right, okay.
But
just in case anybody else was asking that question and wondering, I just,
Yeah, I don't. It's not something that the researchers have developed themselves for the purposes of this particular study.
Okay.
But they've looked at these, they're known personality traits. And I think if there's anybody on the call who comes from a talent recruitment background, then no doubt you'll have encountered these concepts at some point in terms of assessments. So they built this software model, and they built the software model to rate these photos according to these personality traits. But what they found was the software predictions were affected by facial expressions, lighting, and backgrounds, as well as clothing choice as well. So like a whole heap of different variables that wouldn't kind of obviously impact the findings. The researchers' recommendations were that developers should try and shift from trying to correct individual instances of bias to look at broader inequalities that shape recruitment processes. And I think what this means ultimately is that if you're an HR professional and you're tasked with using technology, you've got to understand the limitations of AI. And if you're using third-party suppliers to your organization, providing these tools to you, you need them to explain where the AI is within their systems and precisely how it's being used to evaluate candidates as well. Finally, before I wrap up on this point, the research also suggested that there remains an insufficient contribution from AI ethicists, regulators, and policymakers in the scrutiny of AI-powered HR tools. And I know that the Trades Union Congress, for example, have really been pushing for greater scrutiny of the use of AI by employers. There's some good ACAS briefing notes that cover the use of AI within various processes as well. So again, I can pop a link up in relation to those, but the ACAS resource is certainly worth viewing. Adrienne, I'm sorry you have to sit and listen to me rattle off a few things there, but when it comes to using AI during the employment relationship, what thoughts have you got around that?
Well, do you know what? The first thing that I thought of when I was listening to you talking about that was coming back to very boring GDPR. And it's not something that I thought of until right now, as I say, when I was listening to it. And you'll probably all know that, and you're sort of probably desperate to get your privacy notice done and get it out to candidates and tick that box so that you can say it's in. But of course, the minute that you're starting to use AI, you're talking about these automated decision-making processes. And there is a requirement in your privacy notice to outline what those processes are, because the ICO guidance says that individuals should be given the chance to have human interaction rather than AI. So if you are thinking about it, or you are already using AI processes, particularly in your recruitment, which I think is probably most likely, then do remember that, you know, one of the ways that I think pressure could be brought to bear on sort of regulation of this could be through the GDPR route. So I just thought I'd flag that before I start to talk about other areas in employment. Now, before Christmas, I went to a fantastic lecture on the use of AI in employment and how that could be could give rise to inherent discrimination. And frankly, it was quite terrifying. Now, I mean, as you know, AI works on the basis of algorithms and data sets. And, you know, if you're like me, you'll know that from your Netflix account, where you look at certain categories of programs, and then that's all appears on the feed, you know, recommendations to watch. But the crux of it that I learned about AI is it's really only as good as the data set from which it takes its information. And of course, it's programmed by humans, and humans may not necessarily put all the correct data in there. So there are potentially huge issues when it comes to discrimination. So, you know, if the data set isn't accurately gathered, or it's not gathered across a broad enough scope of data, then the analysis is then going to be flawed because it follows on from the data that it's analysing.
Garbage out, it makes me think.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's just based on input. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I did a bit of digging around this, and one of the most commented areas on the use of AI is Uber or Uber Eats. I can't remember exactly which one. And it's about how, it's Uber to start with. So it's about how it assigns its driving jobs, for example. And apparently it uses AI to decide who's the most reliable, which of course doesn't take into consideration those drivers that might have been late or didn't accept the jobs because they had, for instance, childcare issues. And you can just see how that in turn could lead to all kinds of claims for sex discrimination, for example. But that's just one example, and there are others. In the past 18 months, there have been claims that have been brought by workers who've been dismissed from companies such as Uber, Uber Eats, that type of thing, because they say that the AI technology that is used to verify workers' identities failed to recognize non-white workers' faces, meaning that they didn't tick the box saying that they'd verified who they were and they couldn't start their jobs. And their claims were for race discrimination. And as Peter said, there are other examples too. And the TUC site has got a number of reports that have been commissioned from lawyers and experts on its website. And it's quite interesting to have a read through, challenging the use of AI in other areas, such as things like absence management or performance metrics. And as Peter's talked about, in the recruitment process, where data is gathered and assessed. And one of the examples that I came across in absence management, there was a case where, this is the garbage in, garbage out example, where the data inputted was not correct. So this employee had submitted a fit note. It hadn't been uploaded correctly to the absence management system, and she showed up therefore as AWOL. And as a result, she was dismissed. So she was saying, I've submitted it, but the manager relied on the AI system. I mean, understandably, right? Because that's the data that he'd been given, that's what showed up. And as a result, the employee was unfairly dismissed. So I suppose where I'm coming from is that the systems are useful in a lot of areas, but sometimes there is just simply no substitute for a human assessment, which of course then relies on accuracy and then checking of the data. So using my absence management example, what could have been done? Well, if the employee was absolutely adamant that they've submitted sick notes, and, you know, let's face it, we've probably all come across employees who say they have, turns out they haven't. But in that case, it wouldn't have been remiss for the manager simply to say, well, let me just double check that. If you say you sent it, have you got the email when you sent it? Can you tell us when you sent it? And just generally going through that checking process to ensure that the data on which the big decision to dismiss somebody is actually being fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be intriguing, I think, to see to what extent these systems can learn the nuances and the context, because it's all right having like the raw data, but unless you've got the context and the reason behind it, it doesn't really mean very much, or it sort of weakens the ability of an organization to rely on it. I mean, I'm thinking in terms of things like equal pay issues, for example, where you can look at a data set of numbers and salaries, but without the context about why someone's been paid a certain amount compared with a comparator, something's lost. You know, you're not able to make that evaluation. And what you were just saying there about the absence issues made me think of Bradford factor. So, you know, something years ago, it used to be a really well-used tool to deal with long-term sickness or even intermittent sickness absence. But, you know, I think it fell out of favor, and it is quite a blunt tool, probably for the same reasons. It didn't always reflect the nuances or context of people's individual circumstances. It was just looking at specific days as well, wasn't it? So I think that's pretty interesting. What I wanted to mention there is about Amazon, actually. And I know Amazon have been in the press this past week because of strike action, I think, at one of their sites, the first time they've faced industrial action in the UK, I believe. But I'm not going to talk about that now, today, maybe another day. There's a cautionary tale that Amazon can help us out with, because they built their own automated CV screening algorithm, and they trained the algorithm using its recruitment data going back 10 years. But when it was training itself and using the data, the algorithm taught itself that male candidates were preferable to female candidates based on Amazon's own previous recruitment decisions. So it's kind of like baking in some inequality into the learning. So it reportedly penalized CVs that included the word women's and downgraded graduates of certain all women's colleges as well. Now, Amazon was able to make adjustments to the algorithm, but it was tainted from the start because of this information that was going in, which had been biased by previous human managers. So Amazon abandoned the project in 2017, and it just shows how algorithms can perpetuate human biases if they're trained to learn from historical data, which have those biases, you know, baked into them, basically.
I love that phrase, baked in. But that's exactly it. It's discrimination on discrimination on discrimination, and it's layering up.
Yeah, it's multi-layered, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
exactly. Exactly.
Just going off on a slightly different tangent now, I wanted to look at the information that AI can produce and its use within the workplace. So what ideas have we got about that? Because I know we were talking about it earlier.
Well, we had a muck about with ChatGPT, didn't we, and put all kinds of random stuff in for fun and to explore it and stuff. But I think everybody will have read in the news about schools and colleges raising concerns about plagiarism of this type of stuff. But, you know, taking that into the workplace, I was thinking about, you know, what about those of you that you've got content writers? You'll have social media professionals creating content for your websites, for your social media platforms. And I mean, it's incredibly easy to use these AI platforms and just type in, write me an article on the use of electronic switches in Germany or something like that, or France, whatever. And, you know, when we were mucking about with it, we added it things like in the style of Shakespeare, but, you know, I'm sure that wouldn't happen to you guys. But so the question there is, again, these bots are going to be taking and scraping data and text from other areas that it can get their hands on. So how might that impact your business? Well, there's two reasons. Firstly, how do you know that the text scraped and used then by your employees creating this content isn't going to land you in hot water for breach of copyright, for example? And I think I saw mentioned the other day that songwriters were querying the use of this and worrying about the use of their material. So that's the first thing. You could face action from the copyright owners saying you've plagiarized our material. So that's one legal risk. And then the knock-on effect of that may well be that you end up disciplining your employees for plagiarism, right? Because it's landed you in hot water.
The songwriter, somebody asked it to write a song in the style of Nick Cave.
And Nick Cave
saw it and commented on it and basically said
he said it was garbage, didn't he?
He said it was garbage, yeah. He wasn't impressed by it.
No. So, you know, it can be incredibly helpful. It can be a shortcut. But yeah, I mean, yeah, so say if you're going to end up disciplining somebody for the use of that, then, you know, potentially that's going to be something that you need to watch for. So what controls have you got in place to make sure that doesn't happen? So, you know, I think it's a tricky, tricky area, that one. I mean, I think when I read about the commentary, I think they were saying, oh, when they were putting in place controls to deal with plagiarism, but I don't know. I think the risk is there and you just got to be a bit careful and have some guidance to your staff who are writing that type of content that, you know, that's what they shouldn't be doing, or at least should be changing it significantly so it doesn't bear any resemblance to something that somebody else has created.
It's probably the same with any other resource, isn't it? If there's been any research done, over it's over reliance on it and trusting the sources. And certainly when it comes to ChatGPT, I think this fact about it's only been trained on material up to some point in 2021 means that it's not currently up to date. And so if you're trying to use it as a means of finding technical information, then it could be incorrect. I mean,
it's like looking at an out-of-date manual.
Yeah, and I mean, an example is, I was asking it some questions this morning about 2P transfers, and the information that it provided back was, it was broadly right, but it was missing the nuances of certain situations. And so it wasn't catching some exemptions and, you know, narrow areas.
You're trying to justify why people need to come to us, aren't you?
Yeah, don't fire your employment lawyers.
The message loud and clear is don't rely. Yeah. Phone speak to Peter instead.
But, you know, I also put in as an experiment, can you draft a redundancy termination letter and a bit more information? And it sort of came up with a passable attempt. So that's why I think it's on the cusp of being scarily good, as Elon describes it. But it isn't there yet. And I think if you've got employees that are doing technical roles, and in fact doing anything, that have fallen into the trap of relying on what's produced there as gospel because, it's the internet and it has to be up to date. No, that's a trap. That kind of just ties in with it's a comment from Estelle. So thanks for your comment, Estelle, who says, we're not using AI in any of our HR processes, but we are currently trialing various AI platforms, including ChatGPT, to create scripts for telephony channels, customer experience. Whilst it's not perfect and the messages created need curating and tweaking, it has the potential to reduce the time to create multiple scripts and messages. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think, you know, myself, if you follow me on LinkedIn and you're here today because you saw my post about this session, I did genuinely, you know, use ChatGPT to generate pretty much all of the content of that post, apart from maybe three emojis that I put into it. But it took me all of a minute probably to get the information and then post it. And it was a real time saver for me. It's like, great, here's how I can use it. So it definitely has that positive use. But what other uses might there be for AI within the HR space specifically? We've thought creation of training programs and content. So because these systems can amass a great, great deal of knowledge, it can play the both roles of search engine and context information provider as well. So you can basically create entire libraries of relevant and engaging content for people to be able to access, you know, a lot more easily than with traditional tools. So creation of training programs, one area. Employment and employee performance reviews as well. So obviously bearing in mind Amazon's cautionary tale, but you can train the AI with enough internal data on employees and the life of the company to determine performance levels and to automate the processing of data relating to objectives as well. So that's another potential use. Just straightforward.
Can I jump in there? I think in on that sort of performance review, I think this is where it's getting used to working alongside AI rather than like delegating the job to AI. And as Estelle said, it's about tweaking things. So a similar thing happened in, if you like, an analogous situation on a case regarding redundancy, where the company outsourced the selection to an assessment center and then took the results as gospel. And in actual fact, had the manager reviewed that data from the assessment center, they would have seen that in actual fact it wasn't a fair reflection of the outcome as it should be. So I think in that situation it's a case of, by all means, use the AI to do the performance reviews, but then make sure you get the human eye to double check that it doesn't look completely bonkers and that there aren't issues that have been missed in the process. I think that's probably where I would go with it.
Yeah. I mean, the same goes for drafting, which is our other main use. So job descriptions, contracts, offer letters, any internal comms as well. Obviously, we're going to caveat it by saying there needs to be, you know, a human and a sensible human at that who knows what they're doing to be able to sense check all of this stuff. But I think it's something that can be utilized as a real time saver. And I saw in the various online discussions about what's happening over Christmas, somebody saying, well, AI isn't going to replace your job. It's just the person using AI is going to replace your job. Mm-hmm. So basically make sure that you're the one that's utilizing it to give yourself good prospects, I think.
It's definitely here to stay, isn't it? I mean, Microsoft have just invested massively in the owner of ChatGPT. So they obviously, and I think they've been talking about it for years. So it's definitely here to stay. And it's just going to be interesting to see from an employment perspective what that means in terms of case law and how efficient it can make your functions.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a case law. There is a company that's talking about using it for low-level hearings to challenge parking fines, for example, where there'll be an AI chatbot in real time able to advise individuals who are trying to challenge parking tickets, in whatever forum that happens, giving effectively real-time legal advice and being able to react. So, you know, whether that means it will be rolled out into other areas of the judiciary in, goodness knows, 10, 20, 30 years' time, who knows? It'd be a bit like Judge Dredd, maybe, with a robot deciding outcomes. Right, just before we wrap up, as a reminder, we'll be posting this onto our website. As I said at the outset, all the audio goes on Spotify, so please do have a listen on Spotify, because there's loads of great content on there from our former webinars if you haven't dialed in for these before. We're going to be back in 2 weeks' time with another session. So same day, same time, 11 a.m., 2 weeks from now on the Thursday. Just to wrap up with a bit of fun, we did ask ChatGPT to draft a limerick for HR people who have attended a webinar about using AI in the workplace, and it delivered us this. There once were HR folks who'd attend webinars to learn how to befriend AI in the workplace to find a new pace and boost productivity in the end. So that's obviously indicative of how AI views itself as being a useful tool in the future. We're wrapping up for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope to see you in a couple of weeks' time. Any questions in the meantime, please get in touch and drop us a line. But otherwise, enjoy the rest of your week.